show on comic book in the notice ish topic. We only really got through the notice topic because there's some people wanted to either put together some additional thoughts from Milton or make sure that Steve and Tom Keller had a chance to talk about Tom's proposed changes to Steve's draft. But we did talk about the consent topic for a while, and I think, generally speaking, came to, I hesitate to use the word consensus, but came to general agreement about using David Maher's language with two edits. Number one, first is to remove the words basically and consent from the third paragraph that of David's suggestion. So basically, the registrants just agree that they have read and understood the notification. And second was to add a sentence indicating that this doesn't, the fact that that doesn't include consent doesn't change any of the registrar's other obligation to actually get consent from the registrants. And we were hoping to get some additional...
This is Milton.
Hi, Milton. We were hoping to get some additional thoughts, maybe add some text about some examples of how the policy might actually be implemented to use as a guide, possibly for an implementation team. And also, Barbara had committed to provide us with some insight into how previous task forces had sort of bridged the gap between policy and implementation, and whether or not, how deep into very specific recommendations that sort of approached implementation they had gotten. Barbara had just sent out a few paragraphs that I forwarded to the list previously. And I still owe the list, actually, for next week's discussion of tiered access and a few topics to discuss, hopefully, on the list prior to the conversation, which I'm hoping to get sent out today. So it's a brief recap of last week.
Okay. Any questions on that?
Yeah, can you just update me on who's on and
sure.
what you're doing for the agenda?
Okay. We have on the call myself, Jeff Newman, Jordan Buchanan, Tony Harris, Kathy Kleiman, Tom Keller, Steve Metellus, Maggie, and I'm terrible at pronouncing your last name, Maggie.
It's Manstarkia.
Manstarkia. David Maher, Paul Sahara, Thomas, and yourself.
Okay.
And what we just did is, for a couple minutes, Jordan just recapped what we did last week. And then the agenda of the call was to discuss the draft procedure for conflict step by step. And my suggestion, although up for discussion, would be to start, Steve would start initially to talk about his draft that he had. Tom Keller would then discuss just the one change that he made and some rationale on that. And then I was going to turn it over to you, Milton, to discuss the differences in your draft.
Okay.
And then general discussion on the differences.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, Steve, if you could, I know you've had this on the list for several weeks now, but if you could just give a brief background on your draft procedure. And then we'll turn it over to Tom Keller because he had made one change.
Yeah, okay. This is based on what came out of Task Force 2, but when we first discussed it, there was interest in having a more detailed kind of step-by-step procedure, and so that's what I've drafted here. Basically, it is the first paragraph describes when it applies or what this procedure applies to. And I'll get back to Tom's proposal. And then the steps that are in there are first for the registrar, and by the way, all this applies to the registry in a thick registry environment, but just for simplicity, I've got registrar here. The first step is for the registrar to notify the general counsel. I should say that the basic model that we're trying to promote here is to try to resolve conflicts to the extent possible if they arise between local law, national law, and the requirements of the contract with regard to who is. So the the first step is obviously for the registrar to notify ICANN that there appears to be a conflict, explain what it is and what's happened so far and what and where things stand. The second step is for the general counsel, in this proposal anyway, to consult with the registrar and if necessary, also talk to the national authority or the local authorities that are raising a concern, if that's the case. And the goal is to resolve the problem in a manner most conducive to stability and uniformity of the WHOIS system, and that preserves the ability of the registrar to comply with its contractual obligations to the greatest extent possible. There's also a paragraph in there, if general counsel looks at this and says this really isn't ripe for action or there's really no basis for our getting involved. Step three is reporting. The general counsel, hopefully having achieved some type of resolution, would first notify the board that this is happening, and after some resolution is achieved through the consultation process, would summarize what that resolution is. And if it involved ICANN not enforcing certain parts of the contract, that should be explained and why that's being done. Step four is for the board to approve that action or make changes to it, and this draft said they would have the ability, if they thought it appropriate, to ask for public comment and so forth. I mean, this would really depend, I suppose, on the nature of the problem that was involved. And then step five is when there's been a resolution, it has to be made public, unless there's some compelling reason not to.
Hi, Marilyn. Sorry I'm late.
Hi, Marilyn. Marilyn, I'm just finishing a summary of the step-by-step proposal.
Terrific.
Conflict between national law and contract. The final step is public notice so that everybody knows, you know, why this registrar's who out his output looks different or just what the issue was, and also the registrar would be would include this in their who is out. So that's the basic five-step process. Now, one issue that's been raised is whether how this ought to vary depending on a situation. This assumes kind of a situation where problem arises and the registrar is able to bring it to the to ICANN and try to get this consultation process going before it has to take other action in response to the national law. That may not always be the case, and I think Tom had suggested a sentence that, you know, you should try to conform to this as closely as possible, given that you might have to react more quickly. And I had suggested I had suggested some changes to that phrasing. But I think in general, I agree with the thrust of that, because obviously we're trying to create a procedure that might apply in a variety of factual circumstances, and there might be cases where the registrar simply can't have this consultation process from the very beginning. They have to do something first and then come to ICANN and say, look, the national authority said we have to do this. Let's see what we can work out. So that's basically the speech that I've just put forward.
So that, and Tom, did you want to add anything about the sentence that you added?
No, not really. That's pretty much what Steve said, that what he wrote did not really reflect the situation where registry is forced by the government to do first steps, you know, and then the only possibility he has is to kind of follow the steps process he described as close as possible, to an extent where the government, gives permission to, you know, or it's cooperative in some way.
So the presumption is, just to restate, the presumption is you comply with your contract to the extent possible, but if it's the result where it's not possible due to any kind of legal action, either, I guess you have a national legislator, that still try to follow the process, but if following the process is not possible, then you should follow it as close as possible, and then raise the issue to ICANN.
Yeah, correct. So what I mean is, for example, if the German Office of Privacy Law comes and knocks on my door and tells me that I have to take the email address out of the WHIS, you know, or I will be sued by the government, I will take it out and then go through the process as close as possible. You know, saying, having the notice to the legal counsel, talking to the legal counsel, facilitating some kind of dialogue between the counsel, us, and the legislator, you know, and going down all the steps, you know, until there's some resolution which we can kind of give to the board. Maybe, you know, they only can react to it and say, well, that's what the German government is saying, but at least, you know, it's put up for notice and it is put up for official and public notice as well.
Okay. Now let me ask you a question. Would that be, I know you just had mentioned an example of display of information, but what if, I'm assuming that would also apply if the national authority had said you can't even give this information to a registry because they're located outside of the country, and that would violate.
That would be probably true. I mean, as far as I see how that regulation works, you know, it does not really, I guess the government would not kind of prohibit that, you know, in case that the registry is not showing the data then, or not using it for certain uses.
Yeah, Jeff, I need to get in the queue and ask a question about the question you just asked.
Okay, is that Marilyn? Sorry.
We had experience on the transfer of data outside of countries,
mm-hmm.
With the U.S. in relation to the data protection law. And that has not been the action that countries have taken.
Well, but they might, you know. We're just talking about the possibility that they might do it.
Right. I know there's a lot of might, but I just want to focus, if I could, for just a minute on what has happened so far and what the likelihood of the Electronic Communications Directive is to create any barriers of that nature.
Okay. Again, I kind of, Marilyn, I've gotten, as you know, putting my hat as the chair aside, as a registry, I've had registrars contact me, telling me that they can't give us the registry information because we display it, and therefore that would violate their law. So I'm trying to work out a procedure. I'm just trying to cover all the bases, and you may be right from a substantive on the merits, but I'm just trying to.
No, I understand, but I was actually making a different point. I was referencing a directive which will affect what the member states do, as opposed to, right? I mean, we all understand that the European Commission issues directives, and those directives then are instantiated by the member states. I was making a point about I didn't see the Electronic Communications Directive as creating any new obligations or changes in what countries can do now.
Okay.
Well, but we're not only talking about the EU right now. I mean, that might be the main focus, but as far as I know, Japan is thinking about privacy laws and changes there as well. You know, I have no idea how it works there. You know, it's just that we should have the possibility, you know, to take some action without being in breach of our contract.
So I mean, my only point, Marilyn, was just to, and I think it should be referenced, we're not just talking about display of WHIS, we're talking about anything that involves the collection of data, display of data, or transmission of data. I mean, I think all of that kind of should fit within this procedure somehow.
Jeff,
it should come out, but it should all fit in.
Jeff, this is Steve. The draft now says collection, display, and distribution of personally identifiable data. Maybe we want to put in transmission or something. But, yeah, it's intended to apply whenever it appears that there's a conflict.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but, guys, it would be transfer, not transmission.
Okay.
Jeff, some of the same issues are going to be raised when we discuss our modifications, so we might move on to that.
Yeah, I think I was just ready to do that. Is there any other, before we move on to Milton's draft, is there any other questions?
I would just say, I just sent the list, my tweak of Tom's language for that one sentence at the end of the introduction. So everyone will have it. I apologize, I didn't get that to Tom until last night, so he hasn't had a chance to react to it yet. But.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Milton now, who submitted a draft recently, step-by-step procedure as well. So, Milton, if you could go through your draft but and also focus on the differences between yours and the Steve's draft.
Right. The differences are very simple. Basically, we took what Tom said very seriously, and instead of sort of appending some language in there that basically sort of gives a very unclear out the implications of which are not clear, we tried to say let's be much more systematic about what the exceptions are and what the procedures are if a registrar needs to comply with some kind of local law. So we divided it up into two procedures, and let's call that A and B. And the B procedure is exactly the same as what Steve proposed, so I presume there'll be no debate about that. But the basic distinction we make is let's make a very clear distinction between when governments initiate an investigation or registrars as a subject of some kind of litigation or regulatory proceedings. In those cases, we have to make it very clear that the registries and registrars involved have the right to must comply with local law, and we also we go a little beyond what Thomas proposed. Instead of just saying okay, they have to do what they have to do, we said let's create a few notification procedures so that they describe the nature of the action to ICANN. They provide contact information about the responsible official of the registrar, and also contact information for the territorial governmental agency. So that way, basically, ICANN is apprised of what's going on. However, registrars and registries must be allowed to participate in and respond to investigations in the manner and course deemed best by their counsel, and they must be allowed to modify their practices to comply with territorial laws. When that is the case, when the governments initiate things, then they just have to take a step of notifying. And then when the thing is resolved, they have to notify ICANN of the nature of the resolution, which includes the text of the applicable law and the specific provisions of the registrar accreditation agreement that it is prevented from complying with. And then this information has to be publicized and reported to the board. And that's really the only difference, is that we've simply taken Thomas's idea and we've turned it into a more formal procedure. It's the same basic thought that Thomas Keller expressed, but we just formalized it and made it a little clearer what are the respective rights and responsibilities of both sides of the transaction.
Okay, and if I could just ask, just to clarify, if a government initiates an investigation, I'm assuming you're just talking about a government, not a civil, well, you say, or is subject to civil litigation.
Right, that's basically a government action also.
Right, but you're not talking about civil litigation, you know, someone registrant sues registrar because it believes that the registrar is violating the law.
Yes, we are talking about that.
So you talking about, okay.
I mean, that would impose the same kinds of legal risks and liabilities to the registrar as the government investigation, wouldn't it?
I'm sorry. Let's just clarify that, Jeff. You're asking about a domain name holder bringing a suit.
Sure, anyone. But let's say, take that example, a domain name holder sues their registrar because the registrar is displaying their information, and the registrar is, and I don't even know if countries create private causes of action for that.
Right, they may or may not, but here's what would happen under our procedure is ICANN would get a notification that's saying, we are being sued in this court, here's the contact information for the court, here's the contact information for the...
Well, let me, can I take a step back, though? So you say... And I'm just going on your language. That's only if the registrar or registry deems it in their best interest to notify. Are you saying it deems it in the best interest to take an action or deems it in the best interest to notify ICANN?
To take the action. In other words, the notification is required.
Oh, okay, all right. That's just,
and then the resolution, notification of resolution is required.
But the compliance with the law is not up to ICANN, and the registrar doesn't bring ICANN into the negotiations about how the registrar complies. The registrar complies according to their own best interest.
Sure.
So,
okay,
for example, to use the case you're talking about, they get sued by some, let's say, a completely groundless suit. They notify ICANN that they're being sued, and then when it's resolved, it's thrown out of court, and they say to ICANN, we don't have to do anything.
This is Kathy.
Okay. I was just clarifying, Milton, because the language kind of made it a little, because you have may notify ICANN's general counsel, but really what you're saying is that if they choose to take any kind of action, then they really must, they must notify ICANN.
This is Kathy. Can I join, or am I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yes, sorry. But let me just clarify this one sec, Kathy.
Well, I may be able to help Milton clarify it.
Kathy.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks, Kathy.
Hi, everybody. It's been a long time since I've been on the call. Summer lasted a really long time here in Washington. In the case where somebody's already been sued, that's cut and dry, and it's probably public. And that's one thing. But if you've had an investigation, then you may have, and I've had this now, believe it or not, I represent some small registrars from time to time. I'm brought in to assist. And we've been contacted by attorney generals. And it's not a formal action. It's not a public action. It's a pending investigation. And so there's a question of whether you can actually publicize that without interfering with an ongoing investigation. First, you want to cooperate. You want to respond. You're not really sure what the status is of the investigation. So if you've got something that's cut and dry and on the public record, you've been sued and it's in court, I don't see any problem notifying ICANN. It's a fuzzy situation where there's a pending investigation, and you don't know what the prosecutors want. You don't know what your status is vis-a-vis the prosecutors. You don't know if you're a witness. You don't know if you're going to be the defendant. In that case, you just want to cooperate, and there may actually be liability for informing other people. And I've talked with now U.S. Attorneys on this and people who have worked with prosecutors, and they're like, no, just respond. And then we'll figure out the status. And once there's a formal status, go ahead and publicize it. But don't do it while we're still investigating what the charges might be. So I think the counsel may want to notify ICANN, or they may not, depending on the nature of the contact that's come in from the government, and depending on what their sense is of whether they should be publicizing this right now. Again, criminal liability may attach for interfering with an ongoing investigation.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy, for the clarification. Just to play devil's advocate, if in that situation where there is an investigation, usually if it's just an investigation, there will not be a demand made on the registry or registrar to discontinue an action. Pending the investigation, it would just be a request for information. So if a registry or registrar takes certain action, first of all, the action is going to be public no matter what. I mean, people are going to know if you take it from, you know, either a registry is going to know if the registry is not getting information from the registrar, or the public will know because all of a sudden that information is not being displayed. So the devil's advocate part of me says that that's not really, you know, notifying general counsel, who, by the way, has a non-disclosure obligation to the registry or registrar when requested. I don't see as much of an issue with notifying the ICANN general counsel. So let me go back to Milton.
Mm-hmm.
Just to go back to your example. So the first thing is the registry or registrar takes an action. And then notifies ICANN, and then notifies ICANN of the resolution, and then the general counsel prepares a report to the board, and then there's public notice. Steve, have you had a chance, or anybody else had a chance, to review Milton's draft?
I did.
That's Tom?
Yep.
Okay. Any thoughts?
This is Steve, if I can ask you all.
Sure. So Tom and then Steve. And also, I just want to remind everyone that just the rules of the call are that there's supposed to be one spokesperson for each of the constituencies. So so far we've been okay, but just to send out that reminder. So, Tom Keller.
Yeah, the only thing I want to remark is that I actually like the draft Milton put out a little bit better, as actually the changes I made to Steve's. I thought that it even gives us a good, stable procedure in the case that law enforcement, whatever, comes to a registry and tells them something to do, you know. So we actually know what to do then instead of just following a pre-described process which isn't too clear about what to do if that happens. You know, it just says follow as close as possible, and this process is actually describing it a little bit closer, what you have to do, so therefore you have more security of what to do. So I would rather kind of withdraw my edits I made and kind of vote for Milton's approach to it.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah. First, in response to Kathy, the situation that she talks about is, first of all, not as likely to arise in a case that's affected by this procedure, because here is not a criminal investigation of some kind. This is a question of what you do with who is. But secondly, the last paragraph, step one of my draft, addresses this problem. That's when the authority says you can't communicate this to ICANN, obviously you abide by that until you are able to communicate it to ICANN. So I think that situation could arise, although I think it's unlikely, but if it does, I think it's addressed in the procedure. I think with regard to Milton's draft, there could be some benefit to having a more detailed, if you will, second track, but I think the line is drawn a bit at the wrong place, distinguishing between situation A and situation B, because as I understand it, situation A applies whenever the registrar gets any inquiry, or maybe this could be clarified. Whenever the registrar gets any inquiry from a data protection authority, law enforcement authority, or other, national or local government, I think in many of those cases, it's perfectly feasible for the registrar to follow the B, procedure in B, try to bring ICANN into it, and try to get its situation resolved with as minimal disruption to the WHOIS system as can be done.
Actually, under our proposal, they would have that right to do under B the more elaborate involvement of ICANN if they wanted to.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that I think there are many situations where B is more appropriate than A, and yet A seems to apply. The problem with A, as it's set out here, is that, you tell ICANN something's going on, then you just report to them the fait accompli, and ICANN is supposed to rubber stamp it. But there may be something that ICANN can add to this process in terms of coming up with a resolution that's more optimal. And also, I don't think it can be assumed that whatever any registrar works out with a national government without any participation from ICANN is necessarily going to be acceptable to ICANN. And ICANN has other options. ICANN can say you're not complying with the contract. So one of the things that I proposed in my rewrite of Tom's now withdrawn proposal is to say, make it clear that this procedure doesn't affect any rights that either party has, either party to the contract. ICANN can still seek enforcement of its contractual obligations. The registrar still has any defense that's available to it, why it's not going to happen. So I think that's probably worth doing in any case. But in terms of Milton's proposal, I think I'm not necessarily opposed to having an A track and a B track, but I think the A track is going to be for a much smaller subset of cases than the way it's drafted now.
So, Steve, do you and maybe you need some time to think about this, but where would you draw the line? What would be the A case?
The A case is when the registrar or registry is unable, is prevented from notifying ICANN before either of the investigation or before it is required to take some action under the local law. But obviously, I'm sure there are some countries where the way privacy law is enforced is that the government, you know, someone knocks on your door in the middle of the night, says, you must do it this way, right now. But there are also many countries where that's not how it works. It starts with an inquiry of some kind. It says, have you considered whether this or there, maybe that we've received a complaint about whether your policy complies with our national law? And in those circumstances, I think it's clear we would want to get people in the B track so that we can come to a resolution that does involve, if we try to come to a resolution that does involve ICANN and that can be better explained to the ICANN board as far as why this particular registrar should be excused from complying with a particular contract.
I just wanted to make a kind of a generic point, Jeff, if I can get into you.
Sure. Let me ask Marilyn, hold on one second. Is there anyone that wants to, after Marilyn?
Yeah, I would like to respond to...
Okay, so Marilyn and Milton.
So just to refresh some people's memories and make a point about, I do think that we all ought to be thinking positively about establishing the process and then establishing a process or a couple of different options to the process. We should remember that at one point Europe intended to cut off all transfers of data for all purposes, and yet that is not what happened, and a lot of advances were developed in the transfer of data under the original Data Protection Directive. And governments did develop procedures and mechanisms to allow for transfers. There was a lot of work that went on to do that, including but not limited to work with data privacy commissioners themselves. But it wasn't limited to just the data privacy commissioners. It included a much broader group of government representatives. So I would think we would want to develop a set of processes and then draft processes, sorry, and then sort of get feedback on the feasibility and ability to use such processes.
Okay. Do I have the floor?
Yes, that's you. Next.
Okay. I think what Marilyn is proposing is that we sort of don't take the problem seriously. Let me just read to you Section 2.3 from Task Force 2's report.
Milton.
The relevant parts of it. Please don't interrupt me. I have my say, and then you can answer me. You can get back in the queue.
I do not really...
Do I have the floor, or do I not have the floor?
Marilyn, why don't you just let Milton go on with this point, and then, Marilyn, I'll give it back to you.
Okay. The Task Force 2 is very clear. It says there is an ongoing risk of conflict between registrars or registries' legal obligations under local privacy laws and their contractual obligations to ICANN. And now, since the variety of existing local privacy laws does not allow for a one-size-fits-all solution, registrars and registries encountering such local difficulties should be allowed an exception from the contractual WHOIS obligation. Now, the question is how we grant those exceptions. And I don't think we can say to the registrars, let's just play kind of a high-stakes game of chicken in which we dare the local authorities to basically put their registrars out of business by not granting these exceptions or by making it impossible for them to comply with local privacy laws. Now, I think that the point that Steve raises is much more fundamental and interesting, and I think it highlights what the real difference is here. It's the question of, do you bring in ICANN to these negotiations, these compliance negotiations, or not? And I agree with Steve that there may be some clarification necessary in the language that we use describing how you get into A or B, but let's assume that we have a very clear case where
a registrar is expected to comply quickly and they're in the A track, the question is, do you want to bring ICANN into that or do you not? And it's a very deliberate part of our proposal that we do not. We think that that's really a matter for the local registrar to comply with national law and leave ICANN out of it. I think that's deliberate. I think that's a good thing. I think that allows ICANN the flexibility to show that it's respecting privacy law. And I don't think that the who is I don't think that the who is compliance issues are so fundamental to ICANN's management of DNS that, you know, the stability of the internet is affected if it goes one way or the other. I think you can make exceptions here without fundamentally undermining the ICANN regime. Indeed, if what Marilyn says is correct and very few of these challenges are brought, then this is even less of a problem for exceptions to be made in those cases in which they prove to be necessary. So I really think we need maybe to clarify what is in track A and what is in track B, but I strongly believe that we need to have a very clear distinction between when registrars must comply, and we got to give them the flexibility to comply, and ICANN needs to recognize the variance in international privacy laws and just go with it.
Milton, this is Jeff. If I can just ask a clarifying question.
Yeah.
And to Steve also, when you're talking about bringing ICANN in, you're still mandating that they notify ICANN of the action that they took. The question now is whether you try to bring ICANN into discussions or negotiations with the other party or the government or whoever it is that prompted the action.
Yeah, that's how I understood what he was saying.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's – you want ICANN to be brought in as early as possible so that you can try to come to a resolution that would – to the greatest extent possible.
Right. So, but under Milton's, and I'm just trying to see where in this we differ, or people differ. In both Milton and Steve are both saying, you know, if the action is, if there is something that fits in A, and we've narrowed that down to whatever that is, both Milton and Steve say that they should notify, that if they take the action, that they need to notify ICANN.
Well,
promptly.
What Milton's proposal says is that if they think it's in the best interest of their client, they should notify ICANN.
Well, that's what I just clarified with Milton before. That's why I asked Milton, I said, you know, do you mean if it's in the best interest you take the action or if it's in the best interest you notify ICANN? And I think, and Milton, correct me if I'm wrong, what you were saying is the best interest part really refers to whether the registry takes the action or the registrar takes the action or not. But if it does take the action, it must notify ICANN.
Yes.
Yeah.
As I read Milton's proposal, there are two notifications. The Data Protection Authority in Fredonia calls the registrar in Fredonia and says, we have a question or a concern about who is policy. Now, the registrar then is supposed to notify, if it's in the best interest, well, let's assume that's not a limitation. It notifies ICANN. Then, you know, maybe 3 years later, they work out a resolution with the Data Protection Authority. Then there's notification number two. By the way, we've decided that we're not going to comply with the following 16 provisions of the contract because this is the deal we worked out with the Data Protection Authority. Sincerely, the Fredonia-based registrar. And then, you know, what's ICANN supposed to do? According to Milton, they're supposed to say, fine. We don't care what it was, just, you know, you did what you thought was right, and you can obey whatever you want to in the contract that you've worked out with the Data Protection Authority. My proposal is that at least in the overwhelming majority of cases, it's better to bring, once the first notification comes in, at least try to bring ICANN into it so that, A, the Data Protection Authority understands what ICANN is trying to do, and B, the ICANN will get a better understanding of what the Data Protection Authority's concerns are, and it may well be possible in many instances to work out a much less disruptive resolution that I think would be more defensible for ICANN to enter into.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the point of disagreement with us, and there is I think it depends on the policy objectives. If your policy objective is basically to preserve as much of the existing ICANN contract as possible, then I think what you're proposing, Steve, is the right approach. If your objective is to make ICANN as adaptable as possible to local privacy laws, I think that we're proposing the right approach. And I think that suppose that the system is abused, suppose that they modify 16 provisions of the contract in ways that have nothing to do with privacy, then ICANN can indeed, under your principle of sort of retention of these existing powers, ICANN can de-accredit the registrar, right?
Yeah, under my proposal, but I don't think under yours they can, because all you say is general counsel reports to the board about which provisions of the RAAA the registrar is no longer going to comply with.
Well, I could, I could modify that. I mean, I would have to consult with the people I've discussed this with, but I can see how that could be abused, and you'd want some kind of a ICANN response that says, sorry, you're going to be de-accredited if you try to suddenly, attach all kinds of unrelated things to these privacy-related modifications.
Hey, Milton, this is, I'm going to bring up an analogy, and if you think it's totally unrelated, let me know, and just to try to, if there was a proposal that would say something where the registry or registrar should use reasonable efforts to try to bring ICANN into the action, the reason I would make that proposal is I'm drawing an analogy to kind of a non-disclosure agreement between two parties. If I have a non-disclosure agreement with you, Milton, oftentimes in our non-disclosure agreement, it'll say that we can't disclose any information unless we're required to under law, which could be, we're subpoenaed, or could be the government doing an investigation for whatever reason. And then I would have the right to disclose information because the law is requiring me to. Oftentimes in NDAs, there's also another provision in there that says, but if I am required by law, I will use best efforts to try to bring you into the case to argue why that information shouldn't be disclosed. If you did an analogy to that, and this would kind of be a compromise with Steve, is you said, okay, the registry or registrar is approached by a national regulatory body, and the national regulatory body says, you believe that in order to comply with national law, you need to stop right now your practice. And then you notify ICANN. Would you accept some sort of requirement on the registry or registrar to use its best efforts to try to bring ICANN into the situation so that they could explain their side of the story as to why that's a requirement? So
I don't understand the policy objective there. I mean, let's suppose that it's a cut and dried case that the WHOIS practices of the registrar are in violation of very clearly defined privacy regulations, which they are in many cases.
Okay.
So what is there to negotiate to ICANN about?
No.
Are you saying that the national government needs to reconsider its privacy policy
because
ICANN?
What I'm saying is that the registry or registrar, say the national government says by displaying the email address you're violating national law. So the registry or registrar stops showing the email address. Okay, mm-hmm. It complies.
Yeah.
Then it sends a notice to ICANN saying we have taken this steps because, and it describes the action and it describes contact information
mm-hmm.
for the official, the registry or registrar. So it's done all of that.
Yeah.
And now what we're saying is that there's some requirement that the registry registrar then introduces ICANN or somehow tries to get ICANN into the process so that ICANN could discuss the information with the responsible government agency or whoever's requiring this type of action. I think that's all Steve is saying. Steve's not saying that, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, he's not saying that ICANN should be able to or that no action should be taken until ICANN has a chance to negotiate. I think it's just a way to bring ICANN in so that ICANN could explain its side of the story, which the national government could say yes or no to. It's, that's its own choice.
Well, I think that there are some political sensitivities there in the sense that you bring in a U.S. Corporation and a major U.S. law firm in and against a local government, and I'm not sure that that's going to do the registrar any good in their negotiations. But quite apart from the political problem, I'm still not clear about if they. You say that the local government tells them the email address can't be displayed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point is that the registrar, we have to give the registrar the flexibility to comply with that to limit limit their legal exposure, right?
Correct.
So do they comply and then inform ICANN, or do they inform ICANN and let ICANN negotiate on their behalf? I definitely don't support the latter.
Yeah, I think the proposal that at least I was making, and I'll let Steve jump in after, the proposal I was making is that the registrar takes the action it needs to take, then notify ICANN, but also notify the applicable government agency or whoever it is that, oh, by the way, you know, we've stopped doing what we were doing. However, we do have a contract with ICANN that requires us to take this action. So can they come in and talk to you about it? I guess it's basically the proposal.
Yeah, I guess I would see that as being something that would almost inevitably happen based on our steps, is that once they've complied, they have to report. They report the text of the applicable law, and they tell ICANN what parts of the RAA they can't comply with. Now, if you want to add something in there saying it invites ICANN and the government to get together to see if they want to do something about that, I don't think that's terribly objectionable, but you have to give the registrar who's on the spot the right to comply.
Okay. Steve, is that closer?
First of all, on the political point, this registrar has chosen to enter into a contract with a U.S. corporation that has a big U.S. law firm. And, you know, if they don't want to be in this business or if they don't want to enter into that contract, no one held a gun to their head and said they had to do it. So this, like, your part of the picture here is that you have, as a registrar, you have some contractual obligations, and it's really just a question of finding the best way to try to maximize your compliance with both the national law and with the contractual obligation. I think that the case in which the data protect, you know, the law enforcement authority arrives with their jackboots on and says you've got to change it right now, and you can't tell anybody about it until after you change it, that may happen. And when that happens, I think that the registrar should change it and immediately notify ICANN. But I think the far more common circumstance is going to be where a question is raised. It doesn't automatically require immediate action, but that ought to trigger this type of notification to ICANN to try to bring it in and see if the matter can be resolved. I mean, this may be a fundamental difference between my approach and Milton's approach, because my approach is that you should try to preserve both the contract and comply with the law, whereas I think Milton is just so unhappy about what's in the contract now that he would welcome any action by a national government to try to release registrars from the contract. And I just think from ICANN's perspective, it makes more sense to I think it makes more sense for the whole system to try to encourage a resolution that will, to the greatest extent possible, preserve both the contract and the law.
Okay.
This is Tom. Can I get in queue?
Sure, Tom, and then anybody else?
Maggie Mansorkia.
Tom, Maggie, okay. Tom.
Okay, first of all, I have to say that I have to drop off in a minute, so that would be my last remark on it. I have to agree with Steve on that last point he made. You know, I mean, after all, we really want to have a stable overall system that works just in cases where the registrars are forced to by certain things, you know, for example, like local governments and so on, you know, to not comply want to take any action. You know, so we're not, you know, there might be a situation where registrars might choose to kind of say that they have to comply to certain things, even though they don't really have to, and that would just give tweaks and twists to the whole contract situation. And I want that everything is in line, and if someone really is forced to, he should have the ability to kind of get an exemption.
Okay.
So it's more to Steve's side than to Milton's side.
All right.
I don't think so, because I think I'm talking about when compliance is necessary, you have to you have the flexibility to comply. And you don't have ICANN and a long extended process involved as a mediator in determining how you comply and when you comply. I think if I understand the interests of registrars properly, that's a very dangerous situation to be in. But yeah, if it's a question of there's just some kind of a process and it's not clear that you have to do anything immediately, then that is a B situation to me. And you invoke the B process and you go through that whole elaborate procedure and it is not that damaging. I don't think there's a fundamental disagreement there.
I guess, you know, if I, the registrars, get notice from an officer, you know, that we might be in breach of certain things of our privacy regulation, but it's under investigation, you know, I should really do my best to involve ICANN in the whole situation so that we, you know, that someone else, a third party, can explain to my data privacy officer as well, you know, why we have that regulation, all that kind of stuff. If that is left alone to just the registrars or the registries, you know, they might kind of use that, you know, to kind of deal, to make a deal with their government, you know, and what to kind of get an advantage out of it, compared to other registrars.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about EU, but I'm talking about some hillbilly state somewhere in the Pacific. You know, certain things might be allowed which are not allowed in the rest of the world.
Not that you're talking bad about any hillbilly country in the Pacific.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Maggie, and then I want to try to take a shot at summarizing.
Yes, hi. I was actually born in one of those hillbilly states, so watch yourself. First I need to echo the part of Thomas's point about having to drop off soon. Unfortunately, I have this awful conflict that always jumps in with this call, but I'll be on for the next several minutes. But also, I think on a practical level, we're really all going to end up in the same boat, which is that when the data protection authorities generally have an issue or an investigation, they will come, and it's, again, as was mentioned before, I think by a few people, very rarely is it so harsh, except in the most egregious instances where they come in, they say, you know, you must stop doing A, B, and C, and you must stop doing it yesterday. Oftentimes it is a simple call a meeting to come in to discuss why something is happening the way it is, providing the business purpose for doing that, whether it's contractual or some other business need, oftentimes is enough to take care of the problem. But to the extent there is some action the DPA wants you to take, they really don't insist that you take that action until they have fully understood all of the surrounding consequences, all of the reasoning, all the rationale. And during that time, there is plenty of opportunity for ICANN to get involved. So I think in general, either way, by the time a data protection authority comes out and says you must do something immediately, there has already been plenty of time for a meeting, a discussion, conversation back and forth, and that should, in fact, involve ICANN, because I think it would be, in fact, to the benefit of to the benefit of the registrar and the registries by saying, you know, this is the entity, this is the contract, this is the reason we're doing it, rather than saying, you know, we came up with this all on our own and we think it's a fabulous idea, whether it's right or wrong or whatever. So for all practical purposes, we're really almost always going to end up in one track and not the other.
Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Well, just in our draft, the B track was meant to provide a mechanism for registrars and registries to initiate changes because they were concerned about their exposure. And if that were turned into sort of the 95 to 99% of the case track, we might want to introduce some minor modifications in certain procedures. But again, if indeed it is an exploratory thing, we think that the B track is pretty much okay as it stands.
Okay, so I think that's good. I think that's progress. If I tried to summarize, I mean, I think, and anyone after I'm done with the summary, jump in, I think we all agree that there can be two tracks. I think, and then there's the track A and track B. And in taking what Milton just said, I think the presumption is normally that track B would be the most common one taken. And only in the rare circumstance where compliance is ordered, or where a government or where a registry of registrars is ordered to take a particular action by a governmental body, would track A really be followed. And I think we're mostly in agreement on the way how track B operates. And Milton again may want to as he just said, may want to throw in a couple of minor revisions. Then the question is, how do we define what would go into track A? And I think with the right definition, I think we can all pretty much agree on that track. And then I think I also heard that if track A were taken and the registrar chooses to take an action, that notifying ICANN and attempting to bring ICANN into the proceeding after the action is taken is something that is valuable. Again, that's after the action is taken by the registry or registrar to comply. Does anyone disagree with any of that, or does anyone have any issues with that?
I mean, it's a drafting issue about whether you call it a track A or a track B. I think we do need to build the flexibility into the procedures so that the registrar can't take a step because the local law, you know, or the way that, you know, the local law enforcement authority's proceeding prevents it. You know, we have to build that flexibility into it. But I think we could do that with one track, but I don't feel strong with the test.
Yeah, this is Jordan. I just want to add to what Steve just said. It seems to me that even if you divide into two tracks, you still have the problem at any given point of time along. I might get this back in 1 second. At any given point of time, you might actually need to sort of short-circuit the process, not necessarily just at the start.
That's correct. So you could start on B, and as Maggie said, oftentimes, you know, you're in discussions, and if there's no agreement or, you know, one day the government authority can finish its investigation and then order you to take an action, even though you may not have been finished with track B according to these procedures. So you'd actually be jumping from track B to A.
Yeah, I'm beginning to agree with this notion of having one track and doing it slightly differently, because the whole point of the two tracks was who initiated the process. Now, if you think it's too broad to have any kind of government-initiated action go into track A, and you want to bring ICANN in when possible into those negotiations, but you still want to give the registrars the flexibility, then it might be better to modify that into a single track and have, you know, if you're thinking in terms of a flow chart, have these kinds of compliance options available to registrars at any point.
So Milton, it sounds like you're now in favor of one track, but just having this other kind of sub-track if you're ordered to take some sort of action. Is that what
right? But to my point of view is that the key issue is that the registrars have to have the ability to
negotiate and implement compliance with local law on their own. They can't sort of have ICANN telling them, you know, we're doing this for you. And they can't be subject to these long, you know, procedures of ICANN, you know, given some of the ways that ICANN has responded to, you know, I mean, in terms of time, I think this is just not a feasible option. But if you say we're going to notify ICANN that, you know, there's a regulatory proceeding going on in Fredonia, and if they want to issue their opinions and filings, and they want to know who the responsible government officials that they need to persuade, or they want to somehow lobby to change the laws of Fredonia, then that option could be available to them. But still, if the regulatory proceeding says at the end you must do X, then the registrar has to do X, and ICANN just has to notify them, you know, has to basically go along with that.
So Milton, if I gave you back, if we can give you back your draft, and if you wanted to revise it to incorporate the concepts that were discussed today, could you do that? And then Steve, I'd look to you if you're still on the phone.
I'm here.
To also look at his draft and revise it so that we can. I think we're closer than we think. I mean, I think we are pretty close. And I think with some drafting, I think we can get there to a consensus. So, Milton, if you want to take what we just said on the call and kind of revise your thinking to the one track with that, but preserving the option for the registrar, and then Steve, and then if you submit it to Liz and Steve, if you can take it and see if we can find something that meets halfway, and anyone else, of course, too.
Incidentally, I sent this initial draft to the list at 10 a.m. in the morning, and it showed up at 10 p.m. at night. I just wondered what was up with that.
I got mine at 7 p.m. or something, which is similar, the same question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe, Glenn, if you're still on, you can look into that and see why there's a delay.
Yes, there has been a problem with some of the lists, but posting do take a long time.
And is it just attachment that makes that happen?
Not sure.
Very often it is attachments, yes, and it is word that produces a problem, too.
And, you know, Glenn should check with the ISP that... ICANN is using, that's probably where the delay is coming in.
Yes, I'll do that now.
Never an ISP, that's impossible. Bite your tongue.
It's the wrong ISP.
I don't know, you know, it may be that they have a mechanism set up for, they have to check for viruses before things are posted.
Yeah, it could be viruses or checking for spam or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yes, it is a list.
Anyway, I will make some modifications that will be acceptable to us and send them to the list as soon as possible. Of course, we're not having a teleconference next week, right?
Jordan, what was...
But it was set for Thursday next week.
Yeah, I think...
All right.
I have to double-check. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, we are on Thursday.
That's right. It was
okay, so, and next Thursday we'll talk about some more of the tiered access to get the list out. But I'm hoping we can finish this topic up online, on email, since, you know, it'll give everyone a chance to weigh in. So what I'll look for then is Milton to submit a draft as soon as possible, and then Steve, of course, will jump in, and anyone else, but I know that these two have been the two authors, and hopefully we can come up with a consensus. The other thing we need to think about also is I'd like to try to get a status report to the council for the South African meeting. And if we could have the first two topics finalized, I think that would go a long way. If we can even submit those to the council at that point or shortly thereafter the meeting in South Africa, I think that would go a long way. So Jordan and I will talk to Glenn and to Bruce and see what we can get together for the South Africa meeting.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for being on, and thanks, Milton. Thanks, Steve, for your draft, and keep them coming.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.